We're going to continue this incredible discussion with Dean Radin as we talk about real magic, intention as well, and we're going to take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with Dean Radin. We're going to take your calls with Dean this hour. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, his latest book, Real Magic. Now, you wrote this book several years ago, Dean, didn't you?
I did, yes. It came out in 2018.
Beautiful. Do you know the name Joseph Gallenberger?
I do, yes.
He wrote a book called Liquid Luck. He's been a guest on the program many, many times, and to some people who might not know who he is, he takes groups of people to Las Vegas, and he generates two different groups, happy people, unhappy people, and then they play, they bet, they do their things. And what he tells us, Dean, is that almost all the time, the happy crowd comes back winners, the unhappy crowd comes back losers.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, so emotion is one of the modulators of this ability. Another one is belief. People who tend to believe, or at least are open to the possibility, they tend to do a lot better than people who don't believe.
Is science getting involved in any of this in terms of studying how and why it happens?
Well, there's two levels of how. One is what modulates the effect. This is called process-oriented research, and that's what most of my colleagues and I are doing. The more difficult question is, how does it work at all? Like not what modulates this effect, but what is the underlying power that makes mind connect with the rest of the world? That one is really difficult. In fact, it forces you to look at the philosophy of science. And whenever I mention the word philosophy, people's eyes start rolling back into their head. But it's really important because science, like virtually everything else we do, rests on assumptions, on a whole set of assumptions. Some of the assumptions in science today says that psychic phenomena is literally impossible. That's because it violates some of the assumptions. But we know that it is real because we can study these things in the laboratory and get interesting results. That means that some of the assumptions that most science rests upon is not correct. And our job then is to figure out, well, which one of those assumptions is not correct? And as I said, that's not so easy to figure out, but that's what we're on the trail to figure it out.
Can you explain what quantum entanglement is, Dean?
Quantum entanglement was originally a mathematical prediction based on the mathematics of quantum mechanics, which suggested that if two particles, like two photons, interacted, that when they separated, they would still be connected in some way. So Einstein didn't like this idea, which is why he came up with this idea that it's spooky action at a distance. The problem is that regardless of what Einstein thought about this, it is now known to be a fact that elementary particles that interact will remain connected in ways that transcend space and time. And this is one of the reasons why quantum mechanics is called weird, because it suggests that even though we can't notice it that easily, except for maybe psychic phenomena, that the physical world is deeply connected in a way that transcends our usual ways of thinking about space and time. And what makes it even more interesting is that not only do we know that this is real because we're actually using entanglement in technologies now, quantum computing, for example, wouldn't work if entanglement wasn't true. But leading-edge ideas in science say that entanglement is necessary for the development of what we call space and time, and even more fundamental ideas like entropy. So all these ideas that were once thought to be truly fundamental in science seem to emerge out of this phenomenon of entanglement, which is this connection. There's some kind of connection between things that transcends space and time.
Let's go to some of the phone calls here that they're coming in for you. Braden's with us in Lovell, Wyoming. Welcome to the show. Hi, Braden.
Hello, George.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
I have two questions for you. First, is science a form of magic or is magic a form of science? For several centuries, often the two have gotten mixed up. Second,
all right, let's do it one at a time. Is magic science or is science magic, Dean?
Well, that's a good question. The way I would put it is that that technology is the application of the scientific worldview, and magic is the application of the esoteric worldview. So some of what we do today in science and technology looks like magic, except that we actually understand what's going on to the extent that we can make a smartphone. Like, how many people know all of the details in a smartphone? Very few. It's extremely complicated, but we understand it so we can make it. And people don't worry about the fact that if we gave this to somebody 100 years ago, they would think it was pure magic.
Yes.
Because we couldn't even describe to them how it works at that point, because they didn't even have the concepts. So science and magic actually are related to each other.
Let's go for your second question, Braden. Go ahead.
You were mentioning that, you know, foods and things, how, like, when you say positive things to it, how it seems to affect the mood of the person who receives it. I've done a little bit of research into how frequencies affect the matter, as far as, like, what you can manipulate water with frequencies, and how, like, if you talk to food negatively or positively, it affects it. So, in a way, is frequency manipulation, you know, it also says in the Bible how God spoke the universe into being. Does frequency and vibration play a role in magic?
No question about it. Dean, you remember the late experiments of the late Dr. Emoto with water?
Yep.
They were incredible. And what he would do, Braden, is he would bombard water with what we would call pleasant music and then loud, you know, boisterous music, and then he would freeze it and then use a scalpel and look under the microscope at the frozen water. And the water that got the pleasant music, the soft music, looked gorgeous under a microscope. The water that got the heavy, hard-hitting, heavy metal music looked all discombobulated. I don't know how that works, Dean, but it does, doesn't it?
Well, I saw Emoto give a talk once, and I went up to him afterwards and said, would you be interested in doing a double-blind experiment? Because to that point, he had never done that before. And one of the criticisms then was, in the books and in his lectures, he would show amazing pictures of beautiful crystals and ugly crystals, depending on how he had treated the water. But if you know how you've been treating it, there's the possibility of bias. So he said, to his credit, he immediately said, sure, I would do a double-blind experiment. So we actually did two experiments with him where we had water that he and a group of people in an audience influenced from Japan. So they sent a blessing of water to our laboratory in California, and he was in Tokyo. And what he didn't know at the time was that he had set aside other bottles of water that were not the target of being blessed.
Uh-huh.
And so then we sent all the water to him. He did his frozen water crystal procedure, and I said, send back all the pictures, all of them. Well, so we sent them all back, and then we broke the blind and evaluated which were the ones that were blessed and which ones weren't, and we did find a significant difference. But we also found that in each of those two conditions, some of the crystals were very beautiful and some were very ugly. It's only on average would you see that there's a difference between the two. So it confirmed his basic claim, but as usual, what happens is that the claim is not quite as dramatic as his photographs would suggest.
First-time caller Chris in Muskegon, Michigan. Welcome to the show. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So, Dean, my question for you, you speak of a collective conscious and a conscious ocean, if you will. Uh-huh. And I wonder, how does that relate to prayer and people being an ocean of prayer and the effectiveness of prayer in general? And you're not going to offend me with any answer that you come up with. I mean, so don't worry about it.
Now, prayer, if you think of prayer in a more secular way, without religious overtones to it, it is focused intention.
It's intention. That's right.
Yeah. So what we do in the laboratory studies is we use focused intention. I might use the word blessing because if you have Buddhist monks or a Mongolian shaman doing the intention. They may think of it in religious terms, but ultimately it comes down to focused intention. So as I said before, the whole genre of affirmations and positive thinking, all of that is a kind of prayer. And so we know that that works. Now, a slightly different version would be something like intercessory prayer. So that's an intention that God or spirit intervenes in your on your behalf, but it's still a focused intention. Whether there's a God or spirit that intervenes or not is another question, but the act of holding a strong, focused intention does seem to change aspects of the world.
And Lynn McTaggart's intention experiments are pretty monumental, Dean, aren't they?
Yeah, she was a pioneer in trying to get 10,000 or more people to focus on different kinds of physical targets, and she did get some interesting results.
Yep. Eric in Indianapolis is with us. Hello, Eric. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hey there.
Hey, I'd like to see if he would know what the Big Bang Theory is.
What are your thoughts on the Big Bang, Dean? I've not had a physicist explain it too well to us at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm not an astrophysicist either, so I would say the Big Bang is currently a theory. But when you start really diving down into what do we know about the rest of the universe, we learn new things all the time. And so, it's the current best guess that we currently have, but I would not be surprised at all that as each decade goes by, we'll find new things that we had not expected at all about the nature of the cosmos.
I mean, this is just all remarkable. The fact that we know it's out there. We know things are happening. We know that telepathy exists. It's just, it's truly remarkable, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That's why it's, again, my curiosity is what got me into this business, and it keeps me here because it's all just amazing. It's mostly amazing, maybe, to scientists, because if you go through 20 or more years of education, when you come out at the end of that, you have a pretty good sense, at least you're taught, a pretty good way of understanding the nature of reality. You also understand that at the edge of the known, textbooks are constantly being revised because we learn new things all the time. But you're taught within this idea that everything basically is material. We have energy and matter, and that's it. When you encounter something like psychic phenomena, you're immediately recognized that something was left out of our educational background. Like, we weren't taught this. Like, I'd never encountered any of these kinds of topics when I was going through graduate school. It was only afterwards where I really got seriously interested in it, and it is amazing. Something important has been left out of our scientific worldview.
So true. Dimitri's with us, truck driving through the state of Washington. Hi, Dimitri. Go ahead.
Hello, George, and hello to your guest. I had a concept what the telepathy relevant to, say, how the ocean animals like dolphins communicate. Maybe telepathy is similar of our vibrations, same way that dolphins communicate through water, which is vibrations. And then I'm looking at the vibrations, the medium through which vibrations of human thought travel, like telepathy. Like, say, for instance, a concept of fractals, Fibonacci, and then the orbits. Everything looks like everything repeats itself. And if you apply the same to the principle of atmosphere, for instance, it could be like atmosphere at the subatomic level. Like, take for instance, there's a tiny shrimp that can detect bursts of solar flares before they even reach the Earth, and it's they can react to the flares. So that tells you that they sense something that travels much faster than the solar flares. So there's got to be some kind of medium through which those sensations are sensed by those tiny shrimp or krill. I'm not sure what. But I remember I came across the topic on the web, just reading through, you know, like a National Geographic and so forth.
All right. What do you think of telepathy, Dean, and vibrations?
Yeah, so I think that probably the closest to this concept is the idea of resonance. That when we detect a signal, for example, coming from a spacecraft that's out near Pluto, well, the amount of actual energy left in that signal is way down in the femtowatt area. It's practically completely missing, except that we have ways of detecting it. We detect it because we know what frequency it is transmitting at. And there's a lot of other things, too. But so in this case, the concept of being able to resonate with a certain frequency makes sense. Unfortunately, the way that we normally think of it is, well, what do we know that would work that way over long distances? It would be electromagnetics. But electromagnetics has been tested as a possible carrier for telepathy, and it doesn't work. And the way we know that, for example, is that through very heavy shielding or hundreds of meters of seawater as a shield, the effects are the same. So the curious thing about psychic phenomena is that the usual ways that we think that of the forces in physics, for example, they all drop off with distance in various ways. And yet this doesn't drop off with distance as best as we can tell. And it doesn't seem to be blocked by anything either. So it's transcending space and time in some way, possibly similar to quantum entanglement. And that's one of the reasons why it's been so difficult to study. That's also the reason why it's so interesting.
Absolutely. Let's see if we can get Maria in here from Sterling, Illinois. Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I had like about three different questions, or maybe it was a couple of questions.
All right. I'll probably end up holding you over for the break, okay?
Okay. That would
but go ahead with one.
Okay. The first one is it possible to use like the whole intention thing, you know, to influence a specific person long distance from miles away, like if they live, you know, 100 miles away and you have no other way of contacting them, is it possible that you can intention that they contact you or just intention or influence them from a long distance, you know, especially with like creative visualization?
I think I know what you're going to say, Dean.
Well, yes. So we do experiments in the lab where we test this idea. And there's, of course, plenty of anecdotes where people have attempted to, usually under crisis mode, that they have no other way of contacting somebody, and they sort of intently think about them and the person calls. So huge number of anecdotes that are supported by some laboratory studies suggesting that, yes, if you wish someone to get in touch with you, you can do that. The notion of intentionally influencing their behavior, though, is now more in the magical world. And the prohibition there, or at least the caution within magic, is that you're not supposed to override the free will of a distant person, and because that's considered black magic, if you override somebody else's free will. But for just something like trying to contact them, that's perfectly acceptable.
Can you have that power to override somebody's free will?
Well, it's a little bit like the Jedi mind trick.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so there have been experiments looking to see whether focused intention on somebody else can change their behavior or their attention. And the answer is yes.
Dean, we're going to come back and take final phone calls. Maria, just stay on hold. We'll get the rest of your questions as well when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Dr. Jim Papandrea joins us. What really happens after we die? I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be part of our program. We're going to come back in a moment with our special guest, Dean Radin, and take final calls in a moment as well on Coast to Coast. We are back with Dean Radin. We'll go to your calls as well. Dean, I understand tonight is your 639th talk or interview on this topic.
That is true, yes.
Good for you. You really want the word out, don't you?
Well, when you read what is written, especially in mainstream science, a lot of it is actually wrong. So one of the reasons I'm motivated to give interviews and talks is to help educate people.
Some people have asked if there's any genetic component to our abilities of telepathy and psychic abilities. You've looked into that a little bit.
Yeah, we did a study where we got the DNA of psychics who come from psychic families, and we compared them against controls, who are people who don't report anything psychic from non-psychic families. And we did an analysis of the difference between their genomes, and we found a difference. So we used a pretty simple method. We're not looking for a specific gene, because we don't think this is actually as simple as a single gene. More sophisticated methods would look at constellations of hundreds or even thousands of genes that probably are related to psychic talent. Okay, so we've made the first steps, and we did find something.
Let's go back to Maria in Sterling, Illinois, for some of her other questions. Go ahead, Maria.
Hi. Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
So another couple of parts of my question. There's a few parts. So I have a lady friend that she's always telling me that I should speak what I want, not what I have or don't have. She's always telling me to speak things or conditions into existence, even if they involve other people, even if they involve impossible situations. See, she's always telling me to speak things as though they are, even if they're totally not. And the lady that took my call, she had mentioned something about that there's an author whose name was Florence Shen or Florence Sheen, who had a book out called Your Word is Your Wand. And I didn't know if anybody has heard of that book. And also, can from a magical standpoint, also, can intention and words be used to heal, like, an elderly dog, you know, that's gotten really weak and has, you know, health issues or muscle loss, that somehow it can rejuvenate their health or rejuvenate their function, even if they're elderly? Can some of this be used for healing and for changing things, even involving other people, into something more desirable? Even if you have no way of contacting that person and you haven't heard from them in months, if not years, and can it be used for healing for pets as well as yourself?
You've looked at therapeutic healing, haven't you? It's called what, therapeutic touch, Dean?
Yes. Yeah, we looked at energy medicine in general, things like Reiki, Joe Ray, therapeutic touch, and many, many other methods. Healing intention is probably one of the most common uses of psychic phenomena. Most of the healings are usually described as though they're taking place locally, like a therapeutic touch, the person would be quite close to you. But all of the healers that we've spoken to also say that their healing works at a distance. So it does appear as though healing intention can modulate other people's health, and not just people, it could modulate pets as well. I don't know of any controlled studies looking at healing of pets at a distance, but there were quite a few studies, including a large-scale study that we did looking at healing and influencing people both locally and at a distance. And for people who are talented healers, you can see significant changes. The question does seem to come down to talent, though. This is true for any kind of psychic effect, that some people are talented in this domain, just like they might be talented in sports or music. Other people are not so talented, in which case the effects would be smaller. But as best as we can tell, everyone who can direct their intention or their attention can perform these effects to some degree, including, as Maria is asking here, can you influence somebody at a distance to try to contact you? Probably. Again, talent helps. As far as the book that you mentioned, Your Word is Your Wand, I don't know that book, but it is part of this large category of books that have to do with affirmations, and word magic is certainly part of that.
Next up, we go to James in College Station, Texas. Thanks for holding, James. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Good to talk to you.
You too.
Hold on. I guess I don't really have a question, but I just wanted to, like, maybe talk about the situation on the phone. I guess what I'm trying to say is I've always had the ability to, like, think about stuff that's, like, overly, like, if I think about it for, like, not just, like, a day or two, but, like, decades, like, it comes true. And I just think about it, like, even, like, a car I want to buy or my high school sweetheart, I just think about it and think about it. It's always on my mind.
Well, you said it takes decades for it to happen?
Yes, sir. Yeah, but I would just dwell on it and dwell on it and dwell on it, and it always comes true to the point that it bothers me so much that if I think about, like, cancer or death, that I try to, like, turn my radio up and not think about it because I'm scared it's going to come true also.
What do you think of the manifesting, Dean?
Well, that's part of the process of manifestation is to think intently on something that you want. And it's true that you have to be careful what you wish for.
Well, that's the old saying, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it does seem to be true that if you're thinking negative thoughts, well, you're going to end up with negative things. Whether you should be scared about it or not is another issue. You simply recognize that if you had negative thoughts, you're thinking about negative outcomes, as you said, the one way to get around it is simply to do something else, distract yourself from those thoughts and refocus back on positive things that are of interest.
Dean, why would it take decades to happen and accomplish?
Well, a lot of it has to do with what is it that you want to happen. If you want a gold-plated Mercedes to show up on your driveway, that could happen, but it's probably going to not happen instantly. Whereas, like, when we do something in the laboratory, we're moving photons around. Well, that is pretty easy to do because a photon doesn't require very much energy to do one thing versus another. So a lot has to do with the scope of what needs to happen in the universe in order for your wish to come true. If a lot of things need to come into play, it's simply going to take longer than if it was something that was quite simple, like tossing a coin or something of that sort.
I want to read the subtitle to your book, Real Magic, Ancient Wisdom, Modern Science, and a Guide to the Secret Power of the Universe. That's an incredible phrase. What is that secret power of the universe?
You know, people have asked me that. Hey, you never said what the secret power was. Well, I thought it was obvious. The secret power of the universe is consciousness. That's the secret power, because that seems to be the underlying source of the way that the universe works. Yeah. That's the secret, which is hardly a secret.
And I also would have said that we're the secret power.
Well, I didn't want to make this human-centric. I'm convinced that there's an infinite number or near infinite number of other intelligences out there, some of which would look humanoid and a lot of them which would not look humanoid at all. And most of these other creatures out there will have consciousness of some form. So it's not just us. You know, our whole history has been that we think we're at the center of the universe, and then we find out, well, maybe we're not. Well, that's true in this domain as well.
Let's go out to Hawaii. Carl's with us. Welcome to the show. Hi, Carl.
Hi, aloha. Can you hear me?
We can, absolutely.
Thank you so much. I've been working with intention for 4 years physically on myself, you know, doing what I don't want to do, which is the Karma workout. That's a hashtag, but my nickname's Karma. But anyway, I do pike pull-ups. And when I was 69, and this relates to our earlier caller asking about the old dog and can you nurture it back to health? Well, this kind of refers because I was all skin and bones, but I had intention to see what could I do. And so that was age 69, and in high school, my best was 15 pike pull-ups. Now, pike pull-up is much harder than a regular one, but anyway, the other day I did 16.
Good for you.
I'm now 72, and I've broken my high school record. But I have to say, the only reason it happened was intention and being able to do what I didn't want to do, because I didn't want to do it ever. So my feeling about intention is we need to unify, because we're all so divided up at this point in time. So unification is the sweet honey of healing. So what I say is, I write a song. You were mentioning music as being part of the healing. So I wrote a song called We Are All Dropping Like Flies. You have to misspell F-L-Y-S. So it's on YouTube. But this song allows us to laugh at death, you know, because it's hilarious, really.
Dean Radin, what do you think of Carl's remarks?
Well, first of all, congratulations for breaking your high school record.
At 72, too. That's not bad, huh?
Yeah. And intention, of course, is a very important component in sports. All of the people who are at the top of their game know very well that that by the time your physical body is ready to go, all of the rest of the competitions are basically mental. It's a mental game. Probably the most dramatic effect that you were able to see in something like this is when Tiger Woods, when Tiger Woods got into marital trouble, his game was demolished, but his body was still perfectly good. He was able to do what he had been trained to do most of his life, and that was a demonstration then of when the mental part of the game is gone, the body's just not going to behave very well. So in this case, does intention in this case help in terms of the number of pull-ups? Absolutely, it would.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Amanda, in Riverside, California. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
How great to talk to you.
Great.
I had a question. He had talked about music and cooking and ice and yelling at it. And I actually had a project with my daughter, and we did the ice thing, which was pretty interesting. But I just wanted to know what he thought about was it the music, or was it the music that the person was listening to that brought on those effects?
Well, in Dr. Emoto's case, it was the bombardment of the music right towards the water that he then froze. Dean, what do you think?
Yeah, so if there was just music and there was no one present, then it's not too surprising that heavy metal-type music is pretty discordant. And if you look at the frequencies that are impressed into the water, it shakes it up a lot as compared to something like playing Mozart or some calm music. It simply doesn't agitate the water as much, so it's not too surprising that under those two conditions that you get different looking crystals. But it is also true that if somebody was present, that an interesting experiment would be that if somebody was an aficionado of heavy metal music, that they might have a positive emotional response to that, whereas maybe they don't like classical music and they would have a negative response. And you can do the flip side as well. You have somebody who doesn't like heavy metal music and they do like classical music. So what you're doing with the music is modulating their emotion. And I suspect, but I don't know anyone who's done this experiment, I suspect that in that case, it would be the emotion that would modulate what's going on in the frozen water crystals more than the frequency of the sound waves itself.
Dean, where do people pick up the book, Real Magic?
Any bookstore, online, offline. They're all available, and all my other books are all in print.
What's new for you next? What's your next project?
I'm working on a new kind of analysis on the 20 years of the Global Consciousness Project data to see if we can tell that there was actually effects every single day. Because when you think about it, fortunately, we don't have terrorist attacks every day, but there are large-scale meditations and parties and all kinds of things happening every day. And so if the hypothesis is correct, that mass consciousness is modulating randomness, then we should find effects every day. So it's not so easy to find it because we don't know what those effects are, but I figured out an analytical way of looking at these 20 years of data on a daily basis And I think I did find evidence.
Well, you do a great job, Dean. Do keep in touch with us. Dean Radin with us, a great guest. Up next, what really happens after we die.